SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebick.com. And a morning after some fairly late evening racing. Canterbury yesterday. What a card they had. And I guess I should go back and take a look at that total. I think they did $4 million, which I think has got to be a... I know they were looking for three plus. So they had a banner evening at Canterbury, and the racing was engaging. You had some of the short price obvious winners that came through. And you knew that was in the offing. But, you also had, certainly in the feature, in the Mystic Lake Derby, you had a pretty decent upset. And what was already a good week for Wesley Ward was even enhanced further. And you're saying, Wesley Ward, what do you mean? Well, Wesley bred that winner, King of Miami, of the Mystic Lake Derby. And Jareth Loveberry, with a terrific ride on the Ravelli trainee, American Pharoah gelding. And I know that everybody was concentrating on TD Dance, who was 3-5. But TD Dance arrived late on the scene, and Loveberry, who did a very nice job, King of Miami was drawn well. We talked about that, actually, right, with Jeff Madey and with Marcus. I think it came up, too. And the inside trip, saving all the ground. In the meantime, TD Dance and others were trying to rally wide, but the two horses that stayed down on the inside paths, King of Miami and Modern Science, it was Modern Science that needed to be corralled late. That Bodenheimer ran a nice race at 20-1. Should be noted. The Valerie Lund from the Wide Post, right? Who was aboard there? Fuentes. Very nice stretching out, considering... that he did all the running and made all the the leads until the last call, only got beat a length and change. The margins, King of Miami ahead, TD Dance ahead, back to Modern Science, but it was pretty clear. King of Miami had emerged and shoulders forward. Modern Science actually took money. I just noticing the price there. Well, actually, 5-1 and went off at 6-1. Call it 13-2. It was a horse I kind of glossed over personally. The horse that kind of disappointed in here was Chess's Dream. Really never involved. And what was he? Second choice. 7-2. But Brad Cox won enough. It wasn't as if, Brad Cox was turned aside all evening, because Hieronymus gets the decision in an exciting Mystic Lake Mile. That was a dead-tight photo. And he also, of course, Saranya, who overpowered the Oaks. That was no surprise. But 3-5 got beat, and King of Miami, Larry Ravelli, Patricia's Hope, and Ravelli's a danger wherever he goes. And this was a 15-1 was a very generous price on this horse. And I don't know if you know, Wesley had trained King of Miami and through the maiden breaker at Belmont in May, and then, you know, Ravelli received King of Miami in Chicago, won a, or didn't win, but ran a solid race in a pricey allowance at Arlington, preparing for this. Pretty nice. And happy for Jareth Ludbury to win one like this, and nice payday for everybody involved. King of Miami, the highlight and the $150,000 feature in the Derby. I mentioned Hieronymus, and Cinco Star, who you got to admire the stretch out try by the Mack Robertson trainee for owner breeder John Mentz, Minnesota bred by 3 hour nap out of a 5-star day mare, 5-star Swank, ran a terrific race, only to just in the late stages have Hieronymus corral, and basically was chasing the whole time from outside under Florent Giroux, and gets the decision. They called it a nose. Actually, you got a decent price. Second choice, Hieronymus, $9. The disappointment in here was Parler, who never really got involved. That was in the mile. Godolphin homebred, the Girolamo, out of Pleasantly Perfect mare, Pomona Ball. It was fun. Evil Lynn under Santana, the Wicked Strong for Paradise Farms, and David Stoddicker. 4-5 for Mike Maker. 360 in there. And that all-stakes pick four kind of chalked out. Star of the North had won at 1-2, which wasn't any kind of a surprise. Actually, Jazzy Times, you would have thought with Jazzy Times, 10-1, this was the David Van Winkle that won the Dark Star Turf Sprint. And the favorites were prominent, well-abled, and high crime. But Jazzy Times, kind of behind the speed. And, you know, who was it? Was it Marcus yesterday, right, that said he was against Drina's Star? And Drina's Star kind of mispriced in terms of the morning line, ended up chasing, and you know, the question was, how was Drina's Star going to possibly, you know, get the lead in here? And that was exactly what, you know, I don't, whether you want to talk pace or whether you want to talk the turf, whatever, either way, ended up last of the eight. And then Saranya, who actually only won by a neck over Amalfi Princess, but was confidently handled by Florent Giroux, and that got the stake sequence started. And really good job, you know, Marcus, not as strong as Tuesday night, where he went 9-for-11, but he quite good. Quite good was Marcus's his pushes. I will say, Scott Ehlers, you know, who's the regular lead handicapper for the forum, because I had printed up with Marcus's visit yesterday, so Scott's analysis was there, and really the only thing he got wrong in the pick five, little surprising, was not having Hieronymus anywhere in the tabs, but he had King of Miami as his second choice behind TD Dance. So nice job there. He made Just a Kiss Away in the first of those two allowances, the late double. He made Just a Kiss Away his best bet, and that worked fine. Six, actually, it was almost 2-1. And he also had Samurai Cause, the nightcap winner, on top. So he had Evil Lynn, he had Star of the North. So nice job by Scott Ehlers. And and Marcus. You put them together, and you certainly negotiated the sequence. Jeff, with good insights as well on the big night. The opening salvos for those that latched right on. I was still kind of involved in Indiana at that hour. You know, I've been watching the Indiana stuff because they'd played a little bit, you know, after the conversation with Bill Downs. Talk about that in a minute. But those two early claiming races, I don't have it in front of me, but you had two crazy prices win those first two races. And the early pick four paid $11,800 with two crazy horses. And then even Jazzy Times must have contributed, but you had, I think, 20 and 30 type. Let me see. I'm going to go back and look at it. Give me a second here, because I saw the crazy numbers, and I'll tell you right away. There we go. You had the longest shot on the board, pay $5,360 in the first of the night at Canterbury, and then the long shot on the board at 30-1, almost 31-1, Bankroll Ben, win the second leg. Crazy. And then Saranya at 340, and Jazzy Times. So 11,008 for the pick four there. And when it came to Indiana yesterday, the two stake races that we delved into, that Pearl Tierra at a decent price. Congratulations to Tim Glyshaw. And the big group of Osbornes and Hebel Osbornes and Hebels that that bred this Majestic Harbor filly. Pearl Tierra, Fernando de la Cruz, pretty much wire-to-wire, took control in the opening quarter and cruised to the sophomore stake win on the filly side. And on the boys' side, Hard Luck Justice, and this was Sammy Bermudez, for a horse that was 10-1, was very confidently handled. And once he took the lead into the turn, you could see Bermudez was motionless. I mean, Hard Luck Justice, big performance. They 20-80. And a 61-1 shot, the longest shot on the board, was second in here with Jermaine Bridgeman, Altered. Mike Lauer. Lauer's horses are running like maniacs. This Hard Luck Justice for Lonnie Hines wins the boys' Hoosier Breeder. Nice horse. This is all right. This horse took a couple of starts to break the maiden. Tried as a two-year-old in that Futurity. Ran okay. Beaten favorite, but that was a stretch out. And, you know, here he is, second, two races and then a stretch out. Put the blinkers on and really responded. Hard Luck Justice. A Harry's Holiday gelding out of a Cactus Ridge mare. Actually bred by the Justice farm, Justice family, and campaigned by Jocelyn Salazar. The story to me, and I reached out to Eric on this. There was a DQ at Indy yesterday that was, I thought, a terrible call. 8-1 Bickermans, and Andrea Rodriguez, the 7-pound bug. I don't get this at all. There was no inquiry. And it didn't really feel like there needed to be an inquiry. And Santo Sanger put on a show, I guess, outside, you know, just a couple of strides from the wire. Crypto Cat was finished. That horse was going nowhere. Bickerments comes to CryptoCat, and you know, CryptoCat tries for a few strides and pretty much is you know, backing up mildly and just kind of, you know, just pretty much running out of gas. And to take this horse down was really, I thought, was just ridiculous. And, you know, yes, the horse was getting in, and Rodriguez made it a little tight on Sanger. That's race riding. I'm sorry. She should not be. I'm sure she feels badly having a win taken away. Jay Holden and Arvin Holden are the ones penalized in here. Larry Fontenot gets put up. This is one of those cases where the horse that gets put up was not winning, period. Horse comes arriving late on the scene and gets literally, you want to talk about getting kissed up. This was a gift. I didn't stick around for the explanation from the stewards. I think they absolutely blew that. So anyway, that was you know who won in that sequence was that Bumble of Love, the Hampton Court filly for Brian Michael. And you had a very nice pick five again at Indiana. 14,000. I think 1, 2, 3, 4. Looks like four winners of 14,000 each. 14,006. So fun day of racing yesterday, and it's going to lead into a terrific weekend. It's really summer now, right? Feels like it anyway, especially with the move to Los Al and the move to Ellis Park and some of the scene shifting that's going on. Let's see what else I got as we lead in. Obviously, we'll talk about the Foster card and the way it came together. Very nice. Between the Florida Lee, which is early in the card, and then in terms of the graded stakes, you also have the Bashford Manor. Got 11 two-year-olds for the Bashford. Yeah, nice field. What did the debutante get? Debutante got 10. So, nice fields for the season-ending two-year-old races at Churchill. The Wise Dan got 10 in there. The Foster, 9, led by Maxfield, of course, but South Bend in here. Warriors Charge, Silver Dust. Round up the usual suspects. Necker Island. And Tommy Drury. Sprawl. So nice group. And then actually the nightcap is fun. The Teppan, very cleverly placed on the card. The Teppan goes as the nightcap. Field of 13. To end the multis. That'll be a challenge. So nice, just looking at the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, the pick five. 10 in the debutante, 11 in the Bashford, 10 in the Wise Dan, 9 with a heavy favorite in the 11th, and in the 5th, the of 5, 13. Toby's Heart jumps off the page right away at me. And Invincible Gal for Grand Motion, Navratilova for Rusty Arnold, the new globe-trotting Rusty Arnold. very nice group. And then, of course, the groups in the Foster Stakes, and I haven't even mentioned the Fleur de Lis, where Latruska throws down again and meets up with Point of Honor for Shug, Antoinette in here for Mott, Vault for Cox, and Votant, Ken McPeak. Spice is nice, Pletcher and Lowe's, and Latruska. Nice group of six for the Fleur de Lis. Also the War Chant. Of course, you'd heard that when we talked to Davey Carroll last week, that Helium was heading for the green, green grass of the war chant. And there he is. Nice group in here as well. Wesley with Next for Silverton Hill. Starring in My Dreams, Dallas Stewart moves over. Dino Might, Keith DeSormo, Brad Cox has got Royal Prince. There's that Rusty Arnold again. Very nice. Really, always a fun card. And that was one of the most enjoyable things. I think back to that Foster night. I guess it's, what, 6 years ago already? Yikes. Yeah. That was pretty special. You had the American Pharoah night where he greeted the public for like an hour and 20 minutes, which is crazy. That was a really, really fun. It was fun to go back to Churchill. That it was funny. We just, you know, already had planned to do that, and it ended up being really special. Elsewhere, what else? You got Mother Goose highlights, Belmont. Kind of a placeholder weekend before the Stars and Stripes action. Clarier in here. Chad's got always Karina. There's Rusty Arnold. He's everywhere. Ilio Gami. Make Mischief for Cassie and Gary Barber. And Zajil for Todd Pledger. Just a five-pack, but it's a good five-pack. I guess we can't call this the mother of all gooses. This is like the great aunt of all gooses. definitely points for a mother of all gooses reference. We've got, as Marcus Hirsch mentioned, and there was a little Chicago news you might have seen yesterday. I'll mention that in a second. But the Hanshin, you got a 10, set of 10 in there. Nice group lining up for the Hanshin Cup. And the Chicago Stakes got 11. The grade 3. So, nice start to the stakes that may or may not be part of the final year, final season at Arlington. And it's hard to know. And I say... You know, there was news. You may have seen the tidbit that the Chicago Bears not just, you know, have made this offer for the property, but they've also created a cooperative marketing arrangement deal, whatnot, that involves the Churchill Casino, Rivers, and also a partner in there, this Rush Street Partners, Rush Street, whatever their little moniker is. So, feels like there's been some, you know, I made the suggestion yesterday to Marcus. You know, was this offer on the property? Was it leverage against the city to get a new Soldier Field built, or it feels like the Bears may have been cozying up to CDI for a while, as it turns out. So based on that little tidbit, right? So I just look down and I see I got a a text from Woodbury Payne on his way to Nashville for, and we'll talk to Sean Clancy at 10:30. And I'm laughing because Woodbury must have heard the replay and knows that I can't, you know, we're not going to Nashville for the Iroquois. And very good card, not just either the feature, you know, the first grade one of the year, and we'll let Sean kind of walk you through. He got a nice field of seven. Sean's got, I think he's got three in with River D. So, it's one thing for Woodbury to give me the business about not getting to Nashville for Saturday, but Clancy's really going to rough me up. We can't go. We can't do it. First of all, it was not easy to get down to Nashville, number one. And the other part of it is, I told you, Tina's goddaughter she's got her baby shower on Saturday. Even if we had made arrangements, Tina was she'd have to cancel. So I guess Clancy can say, well, you could have gone yourself. Because do I need to go to the baby shower? No, I don't. But, Tina did. So, and part of the idea of going to Nashville was, because Tina wants to also, she was looking forward to it. So we will try again next year. Thanks, Woodbury. All right, safe trip the rest of the way for Wood. in addition to the grade one of the Iroquois, and I mentioned New York, I mentioned Chicago. You got the Trillium at Woodbine as well. The next set of weekend action, the Ohio Derby. We can't let the Ohio Derby go under discussed. Well, I'm sure we'll get DeRosa will be all excited about right about the action back in Cleveland. So it's been an active week, too. I didn't mention this. One thing I didn't do yesterday, there's a couple of things, a couple of stories I want to get to from yesterday. The whip rule, too, in Kentucky, which was done very nicely and well executed, well orchestrated, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I do want to mention, because it involves a couple of our favorite Mid-Atlantic horsemen, the Farrows, Mikey Farrow and Patty, and Mikey, knock on wood, doing good health-wise, and they won the Power by Far on Tuesday with a jumpstart mare, Hey Mama Luke. That's a great name. They beat the 4-5 shot of John Service, Precious. So, Hey Mama Luke, nice job for owner-breeder Joe Capriglione. And in the that was the mare stake, and on the male side, you had Baron at a short price, just over Power, the crowd pleaser for Butchie Reed, St. Omer's Farm, and Chris Feferic, co-breeders of the Wikilia 3-year-old, wins the crowd pleaser. So I think even some of the smaller venues had stakes too. I should slip those in, right? Essen Aboya, and it's Thursday, and there's already been like a dozen stakes around North America. All right, into the news portion of the morning. And I want to, first of all, some very good news that I put on Twitter, and it was well received. I saw the note from the WC team, the WC racing team that had been monitoring. I mentioned, Golden Sense. There had been a word, subdued word that he had some sort of respiratory. Something was bothering him in terms of his breathing, and he ended up at Haggard. And spent a few days, and pretty much the minute he was, as often happens, as soon as he got to the clinic, the reports, like the next morning, that he had improved significantly. So who knows? It could be allergies this time of year. Could be, is he eating too many cicadas? But whatever. Golden Sense, whatever was bothering him. They treated him, and he responded, and the 11-year-old back yesterday to Spendthrift. So good news. Happy for, because I think people were a little nervous about, because the reports were kind of you know, you really didn't get too many specifics. So happy to report that Golden Sense is fine. The whip rule agreement, and you know, it, as opposed to the rancor that is going on in New Jersey, continuing to go on, the way in which the negotiating and the discussions and the rules were put together, really, I thought, feels like a blueprint. You know, the Guild was involved here, you know, back and forth in terms of, you know, the number of times a horse can be urged with the crop, six overhand strikes with the crop, and then you can backhand or underhand from the 3/8 to the finish line, you know, which feels like, you know, plenty of urging. Can't use the whip twice in succession, you know, hit and wait for a response. And they can use, if there's any danger, anything they, any, you know, any need, you know, to use the crop for, you know, any control issues in, you know, in difficult circumstances, they can use them. And the Guild, Terry Meeks, we know this rule is a fair compromise. It's in the best interest of the industry. And it just feels like this was so much more orderly and professional in terms of the way it was addressed and being inclusive and, you know, fair to everybody. You know, those that are riding the horses for a living, yeah, important to have them involved. So, good job. I think everybody seems pleased. Everybody seemed pleased with their purchases and the way things went, for the most part, at Santa Anita yesterday. The sale to wrap up the two-year-olds, your top knockdown, $250,000 for a Tisnow filly, bred by Tolo Thoroughbreds and Art Tanaka. Pike Racing consigned and Spendthrift bought. $250,000. West Point went to $155,000 for the McLean's Music filly. That was the second highest price. This was a Maribel product consigned by McCarthy Bloodstock. And the top colt, $150,000 from a coffee pot mare. Street Boss out of Parading Lady. Haven's Bloodstock consigned. And Peter Miller bought. So that was the top line results and I'm just looking for totals. Not that there's that much to compare it to. You heard when Boyd was with us on Tuesday, you heard Boyd was, you know, and he was quoted as saying he was a little disappointed about the size and the offerings, etc. But I think they're, you know, as he said, they're committed to California and trying to gird things up. So there you go. Two-year-old and training sale season officially over now, right? A couple of other notes. Dick Powell is going to join us, actually, in case. Why don't we reach for Dick, get him in here. I'll keep providing some news tidbits as we go. Looks like everybody was pretty successful yesterday with their ticket inquiries and desires. Tickets for Saratoga, and even beyond the tickets, our friend Susan Luchik and and family. They're going to come up, and they were hoping that they could get some information, and the office, despite being the ticket office, customer service, despite being buried yesterday, they got back, and so well done on that front. But as Pat McKenna told you yesterday, there was just not an easy day to call customer service when tickets go on sale. But I didn't see any. I don't think I saw anybody complain about wait times or being turned away, etc. So I can tell that there is just nothing but eagerness for July 16th to roll around. And also, I didn't bring up with, I should have brought up with Pat yesterday, the meet hasn't even begun, and they already announced a round of purse increases. I mean, the purses are crazy strong. Open stakes went from 100 to 120. Maiden specials from 90,000 to 100. State bred went from 80 to 85. Optional claiming type things, 110,000. Non-winners of 2, 105,000. Non-winners of 3 will be 110,000. Non-winners of 2, 105. 110, 105, and non-winners of 1, $103,000. Unbelievable. State bred non-winners of 2 at the 45 level will run for $95,000. And non-winners of 1 other than up to $90,000. Unbelievable. I mean, really strong numbers. So, outstanding. I want to mention, too, I think I hear Dick. We talked about that that story that Marty McGee, and we'll talk to Marty tomorrow at 10. Marty had tweeted a couple of tweets about Brooks Smith, the guy that had bought those the $300,000 claims on Saturday. And beyond Brooks Smith, jumping in with both feet, he's also enrolled those horses into the Backside Learning Center Purses for a Purpose program, which designates percentages of the earnings to the Learning Center. And, we talk very often about Anna House and what it represents here in New York. Well, the Backside Learning Center, also a big success story at Churchill, and provides the same kind of services, daycare and education services for children of backside workers. So good luck to Jeff Hiles, and we'll have to get Marty. Marty tomorrow. Well, I'm going to put this on the side, and we'll let Marty tell you a little bit more about Brooke Smith, because he apparently has known him for a long time. And finally, you may have saw that Randall Lowe sold Golden Pow, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint winner, to Coolmore. And they must have made him a proverbial offer he couldn't refuse. I think they put a number in front of Randall Lowe that could not be refused. So hey, you got to take money off the table, right? And Lowe has been, he's been in the game for quite a while. So that it doesn't hurt to pay for a few of the things that don't go right. Dick Powell standing by. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Streaking toward the mid-season break. just hours away now. We got tomorrow and a couple hours today. I will admit freely to looking forward to being away a week.
Oh, you got to. You absolutely have to. Yeah. Recharge the batteries and just yell it to yourself.
I just, you even though we didn't do as much travel as normal, a lot of times we get to this point in the first half of the year, and it's partially about getting fresh for for the summer. Certainly it's going to be an intense summer around here, as we've been discussing. But this let's call spade a spade. This has been a pretty arduous Triple Crown season. At the very least,
Not obviously a lot to talk about off the track in the courts and the commissions and everything else. So that's made it that much more, just intensive as far as following it, reading about it, checking on this, hearing about this. That Eastern District Court just granted the Jockey Club the ability to file the front of the court brief. They have until June 30th to do it, so that just came out this morning. And, I wonder what they're going to say.
Yeah. Well.
We could have odds on that. If we're going to have fixed odds, sports betting, whatever you want to call it. give me a number on that.
Yeah, well, it's quite something the redundancy portion from them is amazing. That despite already, getting what they wanted so badly, essentially a mechanism to drive Lasix from the game, it's just not enough. What really felt like a heavy-handed set of presentation all they have to do is send, they could just file the Washington Post piece that they planted. What else is necessary? It's a very odd the carpet bombing that comes from that organization is relentless.
I like that carpet bombing.
Well, that's what it's been. It's been a carpet bombing of the horseman community, in regards to Lasix for a decade, and they don't care they don't care who's leveled and they don't care who's forced out, and it's anybody that didn't listen to John Secura last week. Don't worry, you're going to hear it again next week because on the best of. You can, in fact, we really should just play that 20 minutes, 25 minutes of John. We really should maybe just play it for 15 straight hours, because it was heard loud and clear by the countless horsemen and owners that feel exactly the same way that as John elucidated.
Well, in reading the Washington Post story and just keeping a timeline, you have 2013, 14 horses pass away in Babbitt's care. It gets investigated. 2015, along comes American Pharoah, and the investigation basically gets dropped. Five Stones gets called in, and Five Stones, the result seems to have been a bunch of low-level harness trainers. Because when we look at the indictments, yes, they're mostly all harness, but they're not the big names in harness. So a lot of low-level harness trainers, and some of them had connections with thoroughbred trainers, so Navarro and Service get pulled into that. What amazed me was that if you take it at face value, if he didn't know anything, he just read the story, you could come to the conclusion and say, so, gee, the bigger you are, the more successful you are. higher the chance that they're going to back off on an investigation, because you're successful, you're in the public eye, you're this and that. And then and basically the story says that, doesn't precisely say that. The facts of the story say that. And therefore, it gets back to our concern from day one with the Horse Race Integrity Act is, how independent is it going to be? Well, we're finding it's not going to be very independent at all. And who's going to make the decisions as to who gets out of competition tested? Who gets, you know, the scrutiny? And if anyone remembers with Rick Dutrow, the head investigator of the Race and Wagering Board, who had a lot of, I will say this out loud, ethical issues, allegedly went to the NIRA race office and asked, who has a big stable here, runs a lot of horses, as if he didn't know. And allegedly it was pointed out, well, this guy over here in Bond, whatever. And that's how he wound up going to the Dutrow Bond, doing this alleged raid, which Karen Murphy, the attorney, has come up with all sorts of information that the Gaming Commission refuses to look at. But it was just, how did they decide on him? And then when they gave Dutrow the life sentence, which was then commuted to 10 years, I was at the hearing in Schenectady when that happened, and two of the three voting members came over to me almost like excitedly, like wanting my response. And I said, well, what you're saying is there's only one person cheating and you just got him. I said, I don't see these measures being taken against anybody else in horse racing. And obviously since then, they haven't been taken by anybody else, at least in horse racing in New York. So the story just continues to be, well, where's the independence? Who's going to make these decisions? And based on who's filing the brief next week against Baffert, I think we know the answer to that.
Yeah. Well, all right. I don't want to get further sidetracked. Yeah. There's so many elements of it from a discussion standpoint that can be. It can be, you know, kind of fleshed out, including, you know, the regulatory aspect, and, you know, you made reference to, seemingly to that. I mean, it's as much a opportunity to call into question how any regulator deals with this topic, these topics. As it is, you know, and I think that's something that, you know, the people have in trying to be fair about everything that's going on, that they've tried to point out that, you know, you might not have gotten to this point had, you know, CHRB, for instance, been more, you know, had more, I don't know what you want to call it, backbone, or had they, you know, taken a different. I mean, that's the lion's share of that post piece is frankly, yeah, about the administration of, you know, and the application of the system. So but that's not, you know, exactly how it gets, you know, disseminated publicly. I mean, it's. Let's look at.
Well, we have to get away from good, solid police work, regulatory work, and avoid these headlines. And this is a horrible comparison, but throughout the years, if you've ever read about Vlad the Impaler, who was actually Count Dracula, which is like crazy history way back when, and the stuff they would do to keep people from doing anything else. So in other words, you go in and commit an atrocity, and you kind of put it on a stake so that all of the public can see it, so that we're all afraid to do what that person did to have that atrocity committed to them. So in the interest of helping the game, there's going to be some sacrificial lamb instead of good, solid work. So then you give a Dutch Roe 10 years. I mean, where does 10 years come from? You give even Linda Rice 3 years. I don't agree with 3 years, regardless of what Linda did. I think 3 years is way over the top. And then the stuff with Bob. Now, when they should have given him severe sanctions, they didn't. And now they're like, well, we have to clean up the game and we have to show the public. Well, no, you have to show that so-and-so committed this violation and is subject to this punishment. Case closed. And all these other things that come into play, including with the CHRB, when he didn't get the punishment he should have, you know, those factors, well, it's going to hurt the game. Well, hey, I grew up, harness racing was the king in New York City. It wasn't even close as far as harness racing and dirt racing. And it was corrupt, and everyone knew it. And, oh, well, we don't want to clean it up because it's going to cause undue damage by exposing all this. Well, how did that work out?
Let's rip something else from today's headlines, Dick, and the early opportunity for the fixed odds concept to be executed, and a lot has to go right and has to be included. It's not going to be an overnight success by any means, and there's a lot that has to be done to make it work. But you know, you've heard this discussed and debated for decades, frankly, probably into the mid 90s. I talked about Stan Bergstein's, you know, the study that that Stan had commissioned, that I think I if my memory serves, that Lee Tomlinson wrote, correct?
I've
got to find it. I had it in a computer. I had the PDF file in the computer from God knows how long ago. And so I'm gonna have to go do a dark web deep dive to find it again. But I think I'm pretty sure that's right. Anyway, your take on what has to happen now. We talked to Dallas Baker the other day after the New Jersey legislature did what it had to do, and Governor Murphy, if it involves gambling, he'll sign it. So your thoughts on what could make this successful? What has to happen?
It's going to be really tough because the way I see it, under the current construct, the most you're going to get is fixed odds wagering on New Jersey races by New Jersey residents. This talk about having 70 or 90 big races that are going to have fixed odds wagering, that's all subject to contracts with those tracks and on those rights, horsemen who have rights in this process, things like that. So I think within the state of New Jersey, it has potential. Obviously, Monmouth Park and obviously Meadowlands Harness, where it could be real good. So if done right, that would be fascinating. Now, am I, as a New York resident, going to be able to make a fixed odds wager with somebody in New Jersey or something like that? I don't know. And if I can't, then it's going to be kind of a regional state issue. So a lot has to happen. And I hope I hope it happens. I think the Australian model, which right now is just super successful, but there's always been a warning with fixed odds wagering, is that you're taking 15-cent dollars and converting them to 5-cent dollars. So therefore, you need a lot of extra fixed odds bets to overcome the hold on those bets in order to keep purses thriving and things like that. Now, Australia did it right. And that was because it was, you know, one entity doing it. You didn't have all this state issues and regulatory issues like we have. So they had the perfect opportunity to do it right. So they showed it can be done, and it can be successful, and it will work. And then the question is, can New Jersey be a model to do it well, to get everybody else involved and saying, oh, we want to do what Jersey did and stuff like that. But there's some real issues, and part of it is, for instance, in New York, everything is illegal. And it's only legal because New York State and its constitution has made it legal. So pari-mutuel betting is legal because way back on the constitutional amendment dealt with that. Now, fixed odds betting, not really pari-mutuel. Can it be considered similar to sports betting, which in New York is now legal? Going to be legal. Mm-hmm. Maybe. That's a possibility, and it might wind up doing it that way. So we'll see how Jersey does, and then hopefully they can do well enough that, you know, not, especially when you see what Jersey did with mobile wagering on their sports betting and how they passed Nevada and the number one state as far as monthly sports betting, and most of it is due to the mobile wagering being, you know, just wide open, just not having all the restrictions that other states have looked at. Then hopefully they can be the model on the fixed odds front.
Now, there's so many things, as I kind of riffed yesterday in talking about. I'm losing track if it was yesterday or even Tuesday before Dallas Baker joined us. But you know, there's a lot of positives to it, and it, you know, if it can, if people are patient, and if, you know, if it's done right and executed, you know, all the areas that could be identified as a pitfall can be avoided. Well, there's some real opportunity. I mean, for so long, Dick, we heard about exchange wagering was going to, you know, bring us a new kind of customer and so forth, and it just wasn't to be, under the framework that exists, and, you know, liquidity issues and so forth. And I asked, you know, I wanted Dallas to address some of that, and I'm sure we'll have more discussions as this thing gets, you know, gets established. But some of the challenges here are different, actually, than the ones that exchange wagering faced. But in terms of an introductory vehicle for neophyte players, there's some real advantage to this. Yep. So that people, you know, right, that they people will, you know, they get to lock in a number, and it's, you know, it's so much easier than having them bet with 10 minutes to post and get 6-1, and then when they go to cash, turns out they get, you know, 3-1, and they don't understand it. I made the point that you don't ever want anybody cashing a ticket and feeling badly. that's a crazy scenario. You want, with new players particularly, you want them to feel good when they cash a ticket, not feel either like they were shortchanged somehow, or that, you know, that there was a bait and switch involved.
Yeah, the caution I give people that ask me about it is, it's not frozen odds betting. And they say, well, what do you mean frozen? When I bet this amount, I'm going to get that amount. Yes, but that doesn't mean the market is going to stay at your amount. You might have taken 3-1, and you could have gotten 5-1 at post time. So now you're like, gee, why did I bet so early? Whatever. And it's also going to be interesting to see in fixed odds wagering, when does the real betting come in? It shouldn't matter if I'm getting the price I want. I should just make the bet and grab the price. But customers have their own behaviors and things like that. So that's going to be interesting to follow. And I was reading a story today about one of the big It's not a credit card company, but it takes bets. It was in another country, and they conducted financial transactions, and they were saying they were during this European Cup, there were 38 bets per second coming in, and they were warning people like, you've got to make sure you can handle the volume of play that's going to be coming in. And this was 6 minutes before, you know, kickoff. And so to be interesting with horse racing is, is it going to pay to grab the early line? Sometimes in sports betting, the first line is the best line. You know, after the first line comes out and it gets beat up, now you can't get that price you thought you were going to get. So it's going to take, for a serious player, it's going to take a new mindset of really having in mind what horse individual value. And everyone says they do that. Everyone says, well, it's like my own one run. And then, well, much you can say that, and they don't do that. But in this case, it would be very valid to do that and have a really serious warning line that you can then compare to the fixed odds that come out and then shop accordingly, stuff like that. So it's fascinating to me. I hope it works. I wish New Jersey well. I think it's going to be a lengthy process, and it sounds like they've made a long-term commitment to it. Where the exchange wagering, once they weren't able to get certain things involved that would enable bigger liquidity. In other words, if I'm an exchange wager and I put up $200 for a horse to win, and I can't find someone to play against me now, it's not a $200 bet. It might be someone bets 60, someone bets 30, but it still doesn't add up to 200. So I don't get my bet matched. And that kind of liquidity in exchange wagering is very, very important. And fixed odds wagering, it will be important, because if the more money in the pool, the less variance you will have. So in other words, they won't have to shift the odds as much if everyone piles onto one individual horse. But like I say, you're going to find that you took a price and you might not be happy with the price. Now you still can make another bet and get the 5-1, including the 3-1 bet. But those are all just interesting aspects of it, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it once it starts getting close to the Haskell. They're going to do the Haskell. That'll be.
That's the goal. Yeah, that's where they want to start. They would love that. That would be ideal.
Hey, we got to do something, and then we got to give New Jersey credit for being out there with sports betting, being out there with exchange wagering, being out there with fixed odds wagering. They're pushing the envelope.
Very much. Very much. I was joking. It was so funny. I absolutely tongue-in-cheek before Dallas was on the other morning, and I said, and I'm sure Phil Murphy will be, you know, on hand to be the first to place the first fixed odds wager. And sure enough, when Dallas was talking about being ready for Haskell Day, he said, and Governor Murphy will be there, he'll be better. I had to laugh. I don't know if Phil Murphy's an easy mark or what the story is, right? Because I think his first bet, if I'm not mistaken, I think he bet the Eagles with that first sports bet. I was there that day when the William Hill book opened. I broadcast from Monmouth that day. You know, after we had tracked the thing for 10 years. That could be something I could for best of next week. I don't know if people would people want to hear all 16 conversations with Dennis Drazen every time he every time they got beat in court and he kept pressing. He kept saying the same thing. We will prevail. We will prevail. States rights. Sure enough. So all right, let's on to some place where they. The bookmaking history and that style certainly popularized How was your Royal Ascot after we wrapped up with you Thursday?
Started out atrocious, finished up okay. I could not figure out the ground the first few days. It was very firm. There seemed to be a bias on one side of the track, which may or may not have been true. Just couldn't get out of the gate, couldn't get a trip. Then as the week went on, I hit some decent place bets, which paid $8. You know, it's, that's for a place. That's fine with me. And came back a little, but no, it wasn't a good Ascot for me. It was very ground dependent. I mean, Friday, they almost canceled Friday. They had so much rain in a short period of time. Andrew Balding said, "I only went out to the track to have lunch. I didn't even know we were going to race today." And he wound up winning one of the stake races. So it was fun to watch. It was great that the coverage went right to the last race. So you get to see these 30-runner, 25-runner handicaps and things like that. And that was just a lot of fun that the NBC coverage did the entire seven races, not just the big group stake races. I was glad for Barbara Benke and Wesley Ward that the stewards actually used their head and took down that horse and moved Campanelli up, because that's the way racing should be. You know, I'm a big proponent of that, and I'm a big opponent of changing that or going back to a different system. And clearly she would have won if she hadn't been carried out eight pats and everything else. So I was glad that they did what they did and gave Wesley a win. And not on ground that I thought they expected to win on, but still she was game as could be. I thought Love was awesome, and she'll be an exciting horse for the rest of the year. Stradivarius, that was too bad, and wound up, you know, 2.25-mile race and was in traffic just about the whole race. And just couldn't get out of that spot he was in, and when it was time to go, the other horse had opened up 5 or 6 lengths. So he was going for his 4th Ascot Gold Cup, came up short, but yeah, lots of stories, lots of exciting races. Like you had pointed out last Thursday, a lot of individual trainers getting wins, which is always great. And I haven't seen anything on the betting as far as comparison, but I have to figure it was enormous with 7 races a day and gigantic fields. So, yeah, it kind of wore me out following. It's like, oh, yeah, now we got Belmont and Churchill, and I've already watched 7 races pretty intensely. So, yeah.
It was fun. I enjoyed it, and it was great to kind of wrap it all up on Monday with Wesley and with Nick Luck, and it kind of hit the highlights. What Wesley Ward has achieved here, and, you know, the influence, the trickle-down effect, when, you know, Rusty Arnold sending a horse, and of course, you know, Clips had already gone previously, but, you know, to win with a, you know, locally campaigned horse, exciting for them and their partners. I know some people, you know, roll their eyes a little bit at it and don't, you know, understand the or appreciate, you know, the interest level, but it's very good for, you know, North American racing interests to go there and compete successfully. It's a big positive. So by my way of thinking.
All right, I agree.
All right, Dick, let's take it all the way around. Kind of a quiet ride. Just a little kind of a quiet Hong Kong week. Yeah, exactly.
Well, no racing last Wednesday. No Happy Valley. So we didn't come back till Sunday at Chatham. 10 race card, and the trainer race has been pretty tight between Casper Founds and John Sides. Well, Casper won 5 races on Sunday. 5 of the first 8. He won both Grade 3 stake races, which are the last of the season. He ran 1-2 in one of them, so he kind of pulled the Chad Brown there. Won in 5 races and sweeping stake races. So he is pulled ahead by 7 over John Sy. Southern Legend won the premier plate, going a mile and eighth. And then Sky Field ran a super 7 furlongs, winning the Premier Cup handicap, 120.55, which is one of the fastest 7 furlong races of the year. So they were both very good, and Casper now has a little breathing room as the meet winds down and the trainer's title. So yesterday, Happy Valley, we had our usual 9 races. 4 favorites won, surprisingly, which Happy Valley, that's a little bit unusual, but track looked a little slower than normal, the way I keep track of that stuff versus the standard time. Might have been off just a little bit, unless it was good. And they were running on the far outside. They were running on the C course, where the rail is pretty far out. So Happy Valley runs their 9 yesterday. Karis Teton, Vincent Hull, Joe Moreira all had doubles. Joe continues to maintain an insurmountable lead in the riders' race. Exultant, horse of the year, multiple champion in Hong Kong, has retired. Earner of over $10 million U.S., 5 Group 1s, and in 2018 he won the Hong Kong Baz over Lee Gracieux and Valdegeis. Now, Lee Gracieux came back and won the Cox Plate, as well as the Arena Kinnan. And Valdegeis wound up coming back and winning the Arc de Triomphe when he denied an able hard third straight Arc de Triomphe. So Exultant raced against the best, game as could be, with just a super fighter in the stretch. All sorts of wonderful things said about him in retirement by Zach Burton, his rider, and Tony Cruz, his trainer. So Exultant retires. We do have exciting horses coming on board, and one of them is running in the 10th race. I talked about this horse a couple of weeks ago. Nabu Attack won 5 times in Australia, ran its first race at Sha Tin a couple of weeks ago, rallied from off the pace, just one going away. His last half mile was 43 and change. He weighed 1,360 pounds for that race. We'll see if he takes off a few pounds when he gets weighed for this race, but he's in the 10th race. Now, what's going to be fascinating is he breaks from the outside. He breaks from the 12 hole going 1,200 meters. Normally, kind of a kiss of death, but he's so big. I'd rather have him on the outside than on the inside, because I think on the inside, bundled up in traffic, that huge stride might, you know, run into problems. But he'll just be a fascinating horse to watch, because he has next year written all over him. So Nabu Attack, racing Saturday night. That's another point. Racing is Saturday, not Sunday this week. 1 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And then next week, we're back at Sha Tin for a Thursday card, but I don't think the racing will be on, Steve. Well, you'll be off. So
yeah, got that
point. But I think they're running Sha Tin nighttime on Thursday, so a little bit of a change in the schedule this week. So we got Saturday Sha Tin, Thursday at Sha Tin, and that's a little bit out of the norm. So we got 10 coming up Saturday, and 7 turf, 3 all-weather races. This is meet number 83 of an 88 meet season.
Excellent. Well, Dick, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the insights on the other topics of the day. Always appreciate the opportunity to give you a little volleyball setup and let you opine. So looking forward to a terrific second half, and of course it'll be peppered with Saratoga action as well as the wind down. Just what do we got left? We can't have more than, how many meetings do we have left?
5.
I was going to say 5 or 6. So okay.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, because we got number 83 coming up, so I'm not counting that.
No.
Going fast now.
I know. And we'll look forward to some Saratoga stuff with you as well. Dick Powell, everybody, HKJC, and take the let's take a time out here, Casey. Let's take the break here because we've got Tony to get to, and we've got Sean Clancy. Looking forward to being abused by Clancy for my inability to get to Nashville this weekend. Chris Hyde, by the way, very important conversation coming up in hour three. And Chris, of course, animal lobbyists on Twitter. And we had the conversation a couple of weeks ago with what now is a real opportunity to end the slaughter pipeline. And everybody's going to have to swing into action on this. I tweeted it yesterday, and it got a smattering of notice, but I'm going to let Chris explain where things are. And there was not only was there that good news about the, you know, the kind of a multi-pronged way to, you know, to make it impossible to transport horses to slaughter. In addition to shutting that off, the mechanism to get this across the finish line, the prospects improved tremendously overnight. After, in fact, I think, you know, well after I had sent out the tweet with the link about how to call to contact your representative, this bill, this you know, these provisions are going to be tacked on to the infrastructure bill. And the infrastructure bill itself got a big boost last night between the bipartisan group of 10 senators and representatives from the White House that really moved the needle last night. So with prospects of the infrastructure bill actually getting over, this, you know, set of provisions could come along with it. And it would be, I mean, after over a decade of work by people like Chris Hyde. So we'll talk to Chris about it in hour three today. Right now, take a quick break. Come right back. Got Tony Black, got Sean Clancy, Chris Hyde, and we should get to Rich Eng today, too. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horse players, the Southern California Daytime Thoroughbred Racing Circuit is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse for our exciting summer meet. Opening day is Friday, June 25th, and will run through Monday, July 5th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific, and as always, exciting racing action is ahead. Our opening weekend features the Bertrando Stakes on Saturday, June 26th, followed by a great 4th of July weekend of racing. On Saturday, July 3rd, the Los Alamitos Derby heads the marquee. Past winners of this race include Eclipse Award winners, Accelerate, Shared Belief, Game Winner, and more. On Sunday, July 4th, Los Alamitos will host a live money handicapping contest with two berths to the 2022 NHC up for grabs. And on closing day, Monday, July 5th, the racing action will be headed by the Great Lady M Stakes. Horse players, remember that Los Alamitos features a traditional $2 pick six with a 70-30 split. This summer, exciting daytime thoroughbred racing is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.